It is a scary world out there. There are people who want to do us and our nation harm. Today's guest has spent his career helping America avoid that harm. Dr. Zachary Mears has worked in national security at the highest levels of public and private sectors. We're going to talk about what risks we face, from whom, and what are we doing or should be doing to keep America safe. National defense and security expert Zach Mears is with us today on Town Hall Ohio.
This is Town Hall Ohio, home to interesting people, engaging issues, and enlightening stories. Town Hall Ohio is a production of the Ohio Farm Bureau Federation, working to forge a partnership between farmers and consumers, and is supported by Nationwide. Nationwide is on your side. Now, here's Town Hall Ohio host, Joe Corneli.
Zach Mears recently came to Columbus to be the Assistant Vice President for National Security and Research Programs at The Ohio State University and to hold an advisory office at Battelle. That's a leading research and development firm headquartered right next door to the university. Previously, he served as the Deputy Chief of Staff to the Secretary of Defense and Chief of Staff to the Deputy Secretary of Defense. He served as the Director of the Advanced Capability and Deterrence Panel, helped with a project that builds ties between the Pentagon and the high-tech community, and also worked for the National Security Council. Zach received his bachelor's in political science from the University of Tennessee, Knoxville, and his master's and Ph.D. in political science from Ohio State. So, Zach, I guess it's a welcome back home for you.
Thank you very much, Joe. It's good to be back.
So I mentioned this, and we want to just kind of set the stage. You're holding a joint position between Ohio State and Battelle. Tell folks why that position was created. What's its intent?
Well, as I started to talk to the leadership at both Ohio State and Battelle and trying to navigate a path back from Washington to Ohio, I'm from Springfield, Ohio originally, obviously. Went to graduate school at Ohio State, and we very much wanted to find a way to come back home, but still do so in a way that leveraged the experience that we had in Washington. And both Ohio State and Battelle have a rich tradition of collaboration. Both are doing leading edge research in fields related to national security, and both saw it as in their interest to find ways to partner together to do more. And so in bringing me on in a joint appointment, you know, my job is not just to continue to expand the national security-related work at each institution, but particularly foster collaboration between the two.
So we're going to talk about some of the specifics of that a little bit later on, but an impressive resume. The Defense Department, the National Security Council. How does one get into what I consider to be a pretty important profession?
Well, yeah, for a lot of the graduate students and undergraduates at Ohio State, as I've come back, they've asked me that same question.
They want to be you.
Well, I have to say I've been very fortunate in the career I've had, particularly over the last nine or so years in Washington. And, you know, I attribute it very much to the upbringing I had here in Ohio. And the education I received at Ohio State. And so if there's a way to pursue a career like this, it's to find good people. I tell people to pick the boss, don't pick the job. You can find intellectual curiosity and deliver value in ways that are hard to foresee when you're initially seeking a job if you're simply in it for yourself. So, you know, seek out those who are willing to get back to you and then do the same. And so as I've moved around, I've found that, if I'm willing to give back in the ways that people gave to me, that, you know, people will come to you with opportunities that you don't quite expect.
Pick the boss, not the job. I like that advice. So I could ask this one question and you could talk for the next hour and not completely answer it. But at the heart of why you're here today is to discuss the state of our national security. How safe are we?
I'd say we're safer than we might feel that we are. It's I can only imagine your listeners looking back over the last 15 years and seeing wars in Iraq and Afghanistan that haven't quite gone as we expected, and in many ways have evolved in ways that seem more challenging and more threatening. We faced a recession in the last 6 years that challenged our ability to apply resources to these national security challenges in a way that we didn't foresee in the first 10 years of this century. And we continue to see resurgent powers like Russia expanding the amount of activity in Eastern Europe and in their near abroad that challenges the very interests of the United States and expanding Western democracy throughout Europe and sustaining it, but also in ensuring that we can trade with our European partners, that we can exchange ideas and capability with our European partners, and the very thought of this free exchange is threatening to the Putin regime in Russia. And the more he acts out, the more threatening that seems. But I see it simply as acting out.
You mentioned the Russians. I think the average person, when we think of major threats to our individual security and national security, though, will think of the radical groups primarily in the Middle East. Mm-hmm. Were they intentionally not at the top of your list?
No, not intentionally. Certainly imaginable that in the wake of San Bernardino and Orlando, that the homegrown or inspired terrorist is, as people, as you noted, think about their personal security is probably what comes most to mind. I'll personalize this in a way in terms of how I analogize relating to people. Don't make the unfamiliar scary. Understand it. Understand the Muslim and Islamic communities that surround you. And I think you'll often find them less threatening than they seem if you are not knowledgeable as to, how they came to live in the greater Columbus area and why they're active in the way that they are in their faith and in their community. And the more you understand them, I think the less that you will, feel threatened by them, but then also the less likely it is that you will presume that they're going to be this homegrown terrorist threat that's attracted to an ideology and an ethos that the Islamic State and former Al-Qaeda remnants throughout the Middle East are inspiring. And it's that welcomeness and that openness that I think helps diffuse what is otherwise people approach as a very tense and almost conflictual relationship. But it needn't be.
Dr. Zach Mears is Assistant Vice President for National Security and Research Programs at The Ohio State University. You mentioned a more aggressive Russia. You've touched there on some domestic terrorism. Can you describe what our general national security strategy is? What's the big picture approach to keeping us safe?
Well, certainly in the Obama administration and more particularly in the Department of Defense, the approach is to invest in cutting-edge capability that positions us well to deter the activities that China is taking and the South China Sea as an example. But it's not just about the things that we're doing. It's doing as much as we can by, with, and through our partners. We're fortunate in that we are surrounded by two very large bodies of water. And most of the threats that we see to United States interests around the world are literally that. They are around the world. And so investing in those that are resident in the region in which our interests are at stake, whether it's free and open democracies in Europe and in Eastern Europe, whether it is expanding the trade and security relationships that we have with partners in Southeast Asia to ensure the free flow of maritime traffic. We have a vested interest in building the capability of those partners who are dealing day-to-day with the challenges from the Chinese, who are dealing day-to-day with the challenges and encroachment by Russia. And we can't want it more than they do. So there's certainly a grain of truth to the narrative that, you know, even our NATO partners, as an example, need to invest more in their own security. We can't want more of it and invest more of it for them.
Do they want us to do it, or they just don't feel the necessity?
I think, you know, similar to the position that the United States has been in over the last 6 or 7 years, they face significant resource constraints, and the types of military capabilities and partnerships that we're investing in are increasingly expensive in their own right. But this crowds out their ability to spend money on domestic issues, investments in their own domestic economy. So as they face these trade-offs, they see a partner in the United States who's investing 25 times more than, investing more than the next 25 industrial countries combined in its defense capability. So they see an opportunity to not necessarily free ride on, but leverage the vast resources and capability and reach that we have to help solve their problems locally. And in many respects, the U.S. leadership, I want us to lead. I think it's in our interest to play a leading role. I feel more comfortable knowing that we're making investments in other regions that help make us safe. But there is a balance. We have to also expect them to invest appropriately. And there's also comparative advantage. We need to find those areas where it makes the most sense for us to play a leading role. And we also need to rightly expect that our partners are willing to step up and lead in areas where they either have a more vested interest or that they have the resources that they could bring to bear but simply aren't.
You have mentioned several times a lack of financial resources, or at least a changing economy. There are those that would say, you know, the only thing we should be paying, or the most important thing we should be paying for, is keeping my family safe and my border safe, and we'll borrow from that. We don't need to be spending on other programs. How do you respond that we ought to bump up the defense prioritization?
Rarely one to suggest that there's not more money that could be spent related to our defense. But I also want the taxpayers' dollars to be spent wisely. And in any large bureaucracy, you are going to find waste. You're going to find folks defending the status quo. So a priority over the last 2 years, particularly when I came back to the Department of Defense from the White House with Bob Work, who came in as the Deputy Secretary, a big focus of his and of the administration's was to continue to find efficiency and find efficiency in ways that, you know, it might seem absurd when we're talking about a budget that's upwards of $600 billion. And I'm talking about us lacking resources. But we're also talking about reinvesting and modernizing large capital programs. Our aircraft carriers that sail globally, you know, we're talking about $13 billion apiece for the next generation. That's a lot of money. And we've got to find ways to do that more efficiently.
We're going to talk more with Dr. Zachary Mears of Ohio State about national defense and security issues when we continue on Town Hall Ohio. We have back in the studio with us Dr. Zach Mears, Assistant Vice President for National Security and Research Programs at The Ohio State University, working jointly with the Battelle Research Institute here in Ohio, and specifically right here in Columbus. Dr. Mears, we were talking before the break about money, resources needed. So how do we spend it wisely, as you said the goal is? How do we know what we need more of? My very uninformed knowledge is that the state of being able to protect us, the way we go about that has changed dramatically. It used to be massive numbers of troops and lots of iron, mm-hmm. and now it's drones and other technological gear. So what do we need to be paying for?
well, to kind of pick up where I last left off, as we think about the – nature of how we've really fought the war on terrorism over the last decade and a half, I think it has a fair amount of parallels to how we think about the nature of how we will operate our military force going forward. And that includes against higher-end adversaries like China and Russia. Our special operators who are operating in very dense urban environments in Iraq and Afghanistan have increasingly found utility in unmanned and robotic vehicles to aid them as they operate in environments where, it's hard to see around corners, it's hard to see over the horizon. The advent of hand-launched, deployable, unmanned vehicles gives them an opportunity with fewer forces to be able to see over that horizon. You now aren't sending the scout forward and putting him or her at risk. You're sending the micro unmanned aerial vehicle forward to have it scout out the environment in which you're seeking to take. So I think the way to think about the balance of the traditional, increasing the manpower of armed forces, both Army and Marine Corps, and investing in steel, as you put it, versus investing in capabilities that give any one individual more capability on his or her own. I think increasingly you're going to find the pairing of machines with humans and finding the ways to get the most out of that collaboration is going to be where each military service is going to increasingly take its military program.
That adapting technology to human use, that sounds a lot of what Battelle is known for. I assume that's part of what you'll be doing in this collaboration between Battelle and Ohio State?
Yes. I think both institutions are invested in understanding the myriad ways in which humans are interacting with new technologies. And that's not just in terms of defense. Take the recent Smart Cities Award by the Department of Transportation to the City of Columbus as an example. We have a tremendous opportunity not just to improve our city, but also to experiment with what is a trend in autonomous vehicle technology. How do we understand how humans need to communicate with vehicles that are increasingly making decisions on their own based on data and algorithms based on how humans drive? What information displays need to change to better inform, the human that they need to take control of a vehicle in any given circumstance? So the partnership between Ohio State and Battelle is to explore similar phenomena, but particularly related to applications in national security and predominantly targeted to Rickenbacker and the Air Force community in Dayton at Wright-Patterson.
So I'm from a generation that actually at 60 years old, I was kind of at the late end of, oh boy, there's the bomb. Now, I never had to duck and cover in school, but not too many years before me did. We've talked about who we need to worry about, and that probably determines some of the what and how, but how would you rank it? Nuclear worries, biological weapon worries, some guy with a handgun and a fertilizer bomb. We've got to worry about them all, but what should we be paying most attention to, or where do you think we're most wise to work to prevent?
Well, I think in terms of, again, back to your frame of reference, certainly in terms of one's personal security, I think the natural fear is the fertilizer bomb that is developed in ways that escape current detection technologies. But as you think about the scale of impact, a nuclear scenario becomes certainly the most worrying and in some cases unimaginable. I'll say that one of the circumstances with respect to Russia's behavior that perhaps is the most troubling is its increasing investment in tactical nuclear weapons. So we entered an agreement at the beginning of the Obama administration to reduce the overall number of deployed strategic warheads globally. But there are certain smaller nuclear devices and weapons that were not included in this this New START treaty. Russia has continued to invest in that, as well as increase its saber-rattling. So as we think about, you know, miscalculation, the risks of miscalculation with a nuclear weapon are the most significant, and the one that I think we need to pay increasing attention to, particularly as we look at Russia's behavior.
Thanks for that. Yeah. Our guest,
maybe perhaps not as comforting as you're hoping.
Dr. Zach Mears joins us. He is Assistant Vice President for National Security and Research Programs at The Ohio State University. Also has a joint position with Battelle Research. We'll be back with more on Town Hall Ohio right after this.
Trouble to my left and to my right. I'll be up worrying all night, with terror in the air and in the evening news. I don't need howling wolves to give me the blues.
We're talking national security and defense with Dr. Zachary Mears, Assistant Vice President for National Security and Research Programs at The Ohio State University. I wasn't joking when I said you scared me there before the break. Miscalculations on the part of, well, the Russians or us. Explain that more. What's the worry there?
Well, the worry is that, you know, particularly based on Russia's behavior over the last year or more, you know, Putin and his regime are obviously increasingly aggressive, and it's near abroad, taking Crimea from Ukraine as an example, and continuing to conduct destabilizing activities in eastern Ukraine, and in ways that they're trying to deter and keep U.S. and our European allies from engaging significantly to support our Ukrainian partners. You know, they are threatening the use of battlefield nuclear weapons to keep, at least raise the prospective costs of closer military cooperation and training by the United States and Europeans with Ukraine. I think this is just one example where, you know, they unlike even 3 or 4 years ago, are increasingly willing to lay out the prospective use of nuclear weapons as a means to test the water and deter the United States and Europe from countering its activities.
So what has been our response, and if you choose to, what should be our response?
Well, our response has been to call them out, to make plain that this type of kind of rhetoric and propaganda with respect to the potential use of nuclear weapons is irresponsible, that, you know, they are... in so doing, they're actually introducing a lot of uncertainty and miscalculation, to the degree that we increasingly think that that rhetoric is leading to likely behavior. The steps that we would take then to both deploy our own forces as well as increase the cost of them for using tactical nuclear weapons would be significant. And so it's a matter of kind of calling them out and asking them to take a step back and look at, you know, what's at stake in bringing a peaceful end to the conflict and kind of civil unrest within Ukraine. Nuclear weapons is not the answer. And so kind of making more plain to them that, you know, this kind of behavior is unacceptable, that the cost that they would bear for actually using these weapons are much higher than they might imagine.
We wouldn't still be talking about this, though, if Putin said, oh, you're right, my bad, I'm not going to do this.
Yeah.
Is it working at all, or do we know yet?
I don't know that we know yet. Over the last 2 years, the administration, in partnership with the Congress, has invested in what they've called the European Reassurance Initiative. This fund has invested upwards of $4 billion over the last 2 years in increased defense activity and training with our European partners. In large part to challenge and help build a more robust defense capability along the border with Russia, such that they're better able to confront and stand up to, in their own right, to these threats and challenges by Putin and his regime. Nonetheless, we haven't seen a marked change in behavior. So I think we have to continue to observe and make judgments about whether or not the investments we're making and the policies that we're enacting are having a meaningful effect on his activity or not. I'd say so far we're having less of an effect than we would like.
What are the chances, and this may not be a fair question, but what are the chances that we're going to return to the days of the Cold War? From an uneducated perspective, I felt a lot better since the wall came down under Gorbachev, and there seemed to be a number of reforms that were taking place before Mr. Putin was in, then out, then back in again. Are we on a worrisome trend?
No, I would certainly not call it a trend, and I think the prospects for a return to a Cold War are relatively low. Despite how it may seem based on the last 5 to 8 minutes of conversation, I'm actually optimistic.
I'm going to keep asking questions till I feel better.
I'm actually quite optimistic about the nature of our security, both in and with our European partners over the next decade. I think ultimately Putin and Russia's efforts to play spoiler will be exposed for just that. They face significant internal challenges in their own right, both in terms of demography, in terms of the state of their economy, the degree to which petrodollars increasingly give them less to invest in, their ability to sustain this level of protracted conflict and unrest is only going to become more challenging for them. So I think the prospects of that are actually low. I think it's salient, and it seems challenging when you juxtapose and combine Russia's activity with our continued engagement with ISIS, both in Iraq and Syria, as well as continuing to fight in Afghanistan. It seems like a lot, but I think we can persist, and I'm still more optimistic that things will be better than they are.
We're going to continue talking national defense and security with Dr. Zach Mears from Ohio State when we're back on Town Hall, Ohio. Welcome back to Town Hall, Ohio. Our guest is Dr. Zach Mears, Assistant Vice President for National Security and Research Programs at The Ohio State University. And it's not by coincidence that we're talking these issues on the anniversary of 9/11. You've given us a lot of reasons to probably pay more attention to national defense issues than the average citizen does, Zach. I appreciate that. In November, we are going to be making a pretty important choice, and not to make light of it, but whose finger do we want on the button? And that's probably more hype than necessary. But when it comes to our choice between Secretary Clinton and Mr. Trump, what kind of thing should the average voter be looking at if we want to use a national security filter for our choice?
Sure. I'll take one step back before I get to that. The policy process and national security, like anything, it's a human exercise, and people are imperfect. And so I think we have to, the way I approached the policymaking process while in government is to recognize that in general, whether you're a Republican or a Democrat, you're in a job of public service because you want to make America safer. You want to develop and challenge us to pursue a policy that will invest our resources in the wisest ways to make us more secure. Inevitably, we're going to fail along the way, and we're going to disagree while we do that. So as we think about the election and think about the qualities that you want to see in the person that is the commander in chief, I think it is the kind of the one that recognizes the world's complex. There are no easy answers. What turns me off generally are kind of the certitude and the platitude. And so if you see either of that from any candidate, dig a little deeper, try to figure out, why they seem so certain that their policy position, whether it's with respect to terrorism and border security, whether it's with respect to the nature of Russia's activities in Europe, whether it's about the prospects of a rising China, political campaigns are generated to be certain, to advertise, to proclaim. So dig a little deeper and figure out whether or not there's detail and there's thought behind the proclamation.
On the national security front, and particularly on the military front, should I be comfortable that a president, at least traditionally and historically, has leaned on the experts? Mm-hmm. Do they listen to the generals and the admirals when it comes to what steps to take?
Yes. Absolutely, yes. And I witnessed this in both supporting the Bush administration from the outside as an advisor, and then within the Obama administration. The best presidents and national security leaders are open to thoughtful debate. They recognize that there is an expertise and knowledge that comes from military service that an academic like me simply doesn't have. So the humility to recognize that, there is a reason why you're heeding the advice and the experience of a four-star general who spent the better part of the last 40 years serving throughout their military chain of command, you'd be ridiculous not to listen to them. At the same time, it's our elected leaders that are ultimately responsible for making those decisions. The job of the military is to provide best military advice. But these are ultimately political decisions. It's, military means to pursue our political ends. And so the politicians and our presidents need to own up and be responsible for the decisions they make.
We got just a quick minute here left, again, in the whole checks and balances question, the Senate and Congress, do they have, should we be comfortable in the amount of influence they have in this space?
I generally, yes. I think if there's one thing that I would ask listeners to demand of their elected officials, particularly in Washington, is that they pass a budget on time. I think one of the biggest challenges in the department over the entire course of this administration is that we've been operating off of 9-year budgets because Congress can't pass a budget at the beginning of a fiscal year. So call your representatives and ask them to pass a budget by October 1st.
All right. Very good advice. Our guest, Dr. Zachary Mears from Ohio State University. He's the Assistant Vice President for National Security and Research Programs. We'll be back to wrap up our talk with Zach right after this. We welcome you back to Town Hall, Ohio. Our subject today, keeping America safe. Dr. Zach Mears is on that task at The Ohio State University and with Battelle. You've given us a lot of insights today, Zach, a lot of knowledge that I appreciate, and frankly, a lot of causes, if not for concern, at least for vigilance. Ohio as a state, we're playing a pretty significant role in each of these steps that you've talked about in terms of keeping America safe. Give us a little look at the national security infrastructure of Ohio.
Yes. Now, so one of the exciting things about coming back to Ohio State as the land-grant institution in Ohio and Battelle is their commitment to continue to invest in the national security and defense infrastructure that is in the state and find more ways to be supportive of the military missions that exist here. So, you know, in our own neighborhood, the Defense Supply Center houses the main logistics hub that operates and animates the movement of people and goods that support our troops, both in the United States and overseas. Continuing to invest in the capabilities that make that movement more efficient, both in terms of the financial support for it that's resident in the Defense Supply Center, but then also in the logistics agency that's charged with actually moving the people and material around the world. You know, how do we engage in research that's supportive of new ways and more efficient ways and cheaper ways of moving these things so that we can invest those dollars in better ways and defense capabilities that we need? In terms of Rickenbacker and then, you know, farther afield, but still not too far away, in Dayton and in Wright-Patt, the Air Force Research Lab and the Office of Scientific Research at the Air Force, as well as the Navy Medical Research Unit that's there, there is kind of a rich tapestry of research within the College of Engineering at Ohio State, the material science folks particularly, as well as the material science group at Patel, the Wexner Medical Center, and Dr. Ali Razai, who partnered with Battelle, again, another example of the partnership that Ohio State and Battelle are trying to bring together, in a product called NeuroLife. And NeuroLife is helping those that have suffered traumatic injury, particularly to spine and brain, that where they've lost motor skills in one or in some cases all of their limbs. You know, we've now, through that partnership and Dr. Zai's work, have found ways to build a technology base that's going to help recovering veterans who have suffered from these devastating injuries as they've served over the last decade and a half.
What might be an emerging technology other than the human body's recovery? What else is on the horizon that will help protect our people and our nation?
Well, one thing that might seem odd, but will be key as we develop more sophisticated and finely tuned engineering materials is 3D printing. So we actually have some very entrepreneurial 3D printing companies throughout the Columbus area, and they're finding ways to partner with the engineers, both at Ohio State, but also at the Air Force Research Lab, who are not necessarily printing the parts, but they're printing the molds that are more intricate in their design to then mold and use hot isostatic pressing to create these new structures. So as we think about previous engineering challenges that have not enabled us to maybe advance a particular aerospace technology in a way that we would have wanted to a decade ago, you know, we now have new technologies and new ways of engineering that give us opportunities that we didn't necessarily have in the 80s or 90s.
So we got 30 seconds left. How comfortable, back to my original question, how comfortable should we be that as a nation and as individuals we're safe?
I remain an optimist at heart, and that applies particularly to where we are in terms of our security. The people that are serving both in our military and our National Guard and reserves are increasingly capable, increasingly committed to our security. And I know that we're going to invest in the right things that equip them to provide that in the best way possible.
Interesting show. Zach, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Joe.
Dr. Zach Mears, Assistant Vice President, National Security and Research Programs at Ohio State. Thanks for tuning in today on Town Hall Ohio.
Town Hall Ohio is a project of the Ohio Farm Bureau Federation and is brought to you with the support of Nationwide. Nationwide is on your side. Join us again next week for Town Hall Ohio.